TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. The Downing Street Minutes. The Downing Street Minutes say that the Bush administration was already committed to waging war in Iraq a year before the war began and was asking the British government to, quote, fix the intelligence data and facts around the policy. The recently discovered memo contains the minutes of a highest-level cabinet meeting in which Richard Dearlove, the chief of the British Secret Service, M16, reports to Tony Blair. In the memo, he's listed under his code name C. The Downing Street memo raises the question whether George W. Bush knowingly submitted false information to Congress when he received congressional authorization for the use of military force against Iraq in October 2002. That would be an impeachable offense. On Thursday, June 16, 2005, Representative John Conyers, ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee, along with 30 other Congress members, held a three-hour hearing at the Capitol on the Downing Street Minutes. In part one of this program, you heard the witnesses give their presentations. Now you will hear excerpts from the lively question and answer section with statements by members of Congress and comments by Ambassador Joseph Wilson and veteran CIA analyst Ray McGovern. The first respondent to Representative Conyers' question is Attorney John Boniface, followed by Ambassador Wilson.
Attorney Boniface, you've already suggested a resolution of inquiry.
Well, Congressman, I think that what's at stake here is whether or not the president engaged in activity that subverted the Constitution. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11, as we know, the War Powers Clause, makes it clear that Congress and only Congress has the power to declare war, to start a war. It may be that the president, if the country has been attacked, suddenly attacked, may repel against that attack. But when it comes to starting a war and to declaring war against another nation, Congress has exclusive power. Now, you and other members of this panel and courageous members of Congress with you, as well as United States soldiers and parents of soldiers, all challenge the president's authority to wage war absent a congressional declaration of war. It was our view, and I was proud to serve as your counsel in that case. It was our view that, in fact, the October 2002 resolution did not constitute a proper declaration of war or anything of equivalent action. The White House, through the Justice Department in terms of its representation, went into federal court and argued that the October 2002 resolution was a proper authorization, was proper under the War Powers Clause. And so if, in fact, their position is that the October 2002 resolution was proper, then we have to consider what was the evidence at the time that the October 2002 resolution was deliberated that the White House had that it may have concealed from the United States Congress. Or even beyond that, was there in fact a deliberate deception campaign that the White House engaged in to deceive the United States Congress into voting for that resolution? And that, I think, is the question of the highest magnitude for this Congress to deal with, whether it was deceived, and if so, whether a war was started against another nation unconstitutionally and illegally, and that the president subverted the Constitution in doing so.
The UN Charter is very clear on non-interference in the internal affairs of a sovereign nation. Therefore, you had to come up with another reason. And the rhetoric changed from regime change to weapons of mass destruction, and then regime change to terrorism, ties to terrorism. Mr. Zarqawi was found.
Which would be specifically what the reference was to fixing the facts around the policy.
Exactly.
I mean, I think that's exactly right. And also, if you recall, my recollection of the use of force authorization was that the administration had to persuade itself that the threat to the United States was such that military action was the only possible action. Hence, you have the argument made, the case built on weapons of mass destruction, a case which we now know was built out of whole cloth.
Congressman, can I just add to this? I think it is important to highlight that this letter on March 18, 2003, that the president sent to the United States Congress was his official determination in accordance with the October 2002 resolution that this Congress passed as to why we were going to war against Iraq. And he says in this letter, as he was required to do under the October 2002 resolution, that military action was necessary to protect the national security of the United States against the continuing threat posed by Iraq, and, point two, to be consistent with the United States and other countries continuing to take the necessary actions against international terrorists, terrorist organizations, et cetera, related to the September 11th attacks. Those were the two justifications that he formally reported in this letter, in this official document. And the point here is if the Downing Street minutes are true, and if the president was engaged in a policy of fixing the intelligence, then did he willfully and knowingly submit a false statement to the United States Congress? Did he willingly and knowfully say to the Congress that, in fact, we were taking military action to protect the national security of the United States against the continuing threat posed by Iraq when he knew that that was not true? Did he know that to be the case? And that is the question that needs to be answered by this Congress.
Right. Willingly, yes. Knowingly, no. The chair recognizes Jim McDermott, who will be followed by Sheila Jackson Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to commend you for having these hearings and for the committee. Recently, the press has come out with stories about the bombing raids that were going on before, during the period between September and actual invasion in March. And I would like to hear what you know about that, because it seems to me they were not only cooking the books, they were putting facts on the ground to support what they were saying they were doing.
That's exactly right. Your source for that is the British Ministry of Defense. And the reason that the British Ministry of Defense surrendered these documents is because Parliament required them to. The step-up in bombing was incredible. In March, April of 2002, there were hardly any bombs dropped at all. By the time September came along, several hundred tons of bombs had been dropped. The war had really started by September of 2002. This is on the public record now. And the question is, these were not only UK bombers and fighters. The question is, under what authority did our armed forces do these warlike acts, and whether those warlike acts were in any way authorized by the people who are supposed to authorize war in this country. I would just mention one other thing, and that is, Congressman McDermott, when you went to Baghdad, I remember you being interviewed by George Stephanopoulos, and at one point he said, Congressman McDermott, you're not saying that the American president would mislead the American people, are you? And you know, I heard the gasps go up in the rec rooms around my neighborhood. And you said, that's precisely what I'm suggesting, George. This is a nonpartisan affair. When a president of the United States wishes to go to war, whether it's LBJ or George Bush, yes, he'll mislead the American people. Thank you for asking the question. And for the first time in his life, George Stephanopoulos didn't know what to say.
I've got to go vote.
The chair recognizes for questions or comments the gentlelady from Texas, Sheila Jackson Lee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for convening this hearing, and witnesses, thank you very, very much. I want to officially go on record, and if no one else has apologized, I want to apologize on behalf of the institutions of this nation, the United States Senate, the United States House of Representatives, and if I can extend to the executive of the United States of America. The reason I apologize is, as the counsel has indicated, and the argument that I recall that I made in the fall of 2002 was that this was not a constitutional vote and that the authority of the declaration of war was that of this Congress. I believe the nation owes you an apology, and it owes an apology to all of the families that have now lost loved ones who willingly went to serve on the front lines in Iraq and Afghanistan. I hope you will hold me to that, and as well, I hope you will hold me to action on what we're hearing today.
That was Sheila Jackson Lee from Texas. Next is Representative Jim Moran from Virginia.
What I would like to do is to get back to why we did do it. We understand that the reasons that we were given were part of an endemic pattern of deceit. They were not the real reason. But what do you think was the real reason? It's been suggested that the oil companies were concerned. We were Saddam was giving contracts to Russia and France, and maybe that's what it was. We wanted to get control over the oil. It's been suggested that rather than being the president of a failed economy, which is a situation in 2003, that being commander-in-chief of a mighty military was a lot better political position to be in. It was a suggestion that while Iraq was no threat to the United States, Iraq could have been a threat to our ally in the Middle East. What was the real motivation in your mind for why we did go to war in Iraq?
All of the above.
All of the above.
Yeah. I use the acronym OIL. O for oil, I for Israel, and L for the logistical base necessary or deemed necessary by the so-called neocons, and it reeks through all their documents, the logistical military base whereby the United States and Israel can dominate that area of the world. It's a very strategically important area of the world, mostly because it has oil, but also because Israel, which is traditionally described as our ally, and I don't know of any alliance we have with Israel, has been very influential in our policy. Witness the fact that the president, first President Bush's national security advisor, Scowcroft, has described the president as being mesmerized by Ariel Sharon, who has our president wrapped around his little finger, okay? So what I'm saying here is oil was a major factor. Israel was another factor, and I have to say that Israel is something that is not allowed to be brought up in polite conversation. Last time I did this, a previous director of Central Intelligence called me anti-Semitic. And the other thing is the ideological strategic vision of the so-called neocons. You could see it in their documents. We are the sole remaining superpower in the world. We would be remiss in our duty were we not to use this power in every strategically important part of the world. And what's more important than the Middle East? That would be my answer, Congressman.
That was former CIA analyst Ray McGovern. Next is Charles Rangel from New York.
Has anyone here testified earlier that they believe that the information we have now is sufficient to conduct an inquiry to see whether or not the president knew or should have known that Iraq was no threat, or Saddam Hussein was no threat to the United States of America?
Congressman. We have at afterdowningstreet.org. My name is John Bonifaz, co-founder of afterdowningstreet.org. We have launched a campaign on behalf of a national coalition of veterans groups, peace organizations, public interest organizations, and ordinary citizens across this country, asking this Congress to engage in a formal congressional investigation into whether or not the president has committed a high crime, whether he has committed impeachable offenses. And all we're asking at this point is for answers from these questions. All we're asking is to know the truth as to whether or not the president engaged in a deliberate deception campaign. Some of his supporters want to say this was a failure of intelligence. If the questions get asked and they get answered sufficiently, documents get subpoenaed, emails, contemporaneous notes get subpoenaed, people get put under oath, and at the ultimate end of that investigation is determined that that's all it was, a failure of intelligence, then so be it. But if, in fact, the Downing Street minutes are accurate and Richard Dearlove, British senior foreign intelligence officer, is accurate when he said that the intelligence and facts were being fixed around the policy, if that's what the truth is, then the American people and the United States Congress deserve to know. Cindy Sheehan and all the military families who have suffered losses in this war deserve to know. We all deserve to know the truth as to whether or not the president has lied to the United States Congress and the American people about the basis for sending this nation into war. We owe it to ourselves, and we owe it to the Constitution.
Mr. Hinchey of New York.
Mr. Conyers, I want to thank you very much for this historic hearing and for doing this and for leading this in a very courageous way. And I also want to thank
the four of you for being here today. This country, in my opinion, is facing one of the most critical moments in our history. The idea that a president of the United States may have misled the Congress and the American people with regard to war is the most flagrant example of bad leadership and irresponsibility and corruption that one can imagine in a democratic republic such as ours. The fact that we're in a tiny little room like this discussing one of the most important issue before the American public indicates how irresponsible this Congress is. Under the Constitution, the Congress of the United States has the responsibility to oversee the executive branch and to make certain that the executive branch actions and activities are wholly and completely consistent with the law as written by the Congress. This Congress has abrogated its responsibility, failed completely in its obligations and responsibilities to oversee this administration. It's unfortunate, but in Washington today we have a monolithic government. We do not have the checks and balances which are so critically important to allowing this country to keep functioning properly. Many of us realized at the time that that resolution was passed in October that the basis for the resolution, as it was presented by the White House and the leadership here in the Congress, was largely, if not completely, false. We did not have all the information then, but on the basis of the information that we had, which was available to every member of the Congress and to a large number of the American population, it was clear that there was no connection between Iraq and the attack of September 11th, that there was no relationship of any consequence between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden, which was as it was presented by the administration, and it was clear that whatever weapons of mass destruction, chemical and biological weapons, including all of those which were placed in Iraq during the mid to late 1980s and early 1990s by this government under the administration of Ronald Reagan and the administration of George H.W. Bush, all of those chemical and biological weapons as well as conventional weapons which were sent there during that time were largely accounted for, if not completely accounted for. And now the Downing Street memo, which says clearly that the administration twisted the intelligence and the facts around the policy, documents again what we believed to be the case in October of 2002 and all of the period of time, sometime before that and all the period of time after that.
Thank you very much. Time is moving rapidly. We're trying to begin to move toward a close. The chair recognizes Mr. Nava.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Let me begin by thanking you, Mr. Conyers, for holding this hearing and the witnesses and everybody for participating in it. I think we have five crises that we're facing simultaneously. One, we have a war going on in which people are dying. Two, we see that war seems to be wrecking our armed forces. Three, we seem to be wrecking our intelligence capability, which is another crisis. Four, there is a lack of checks and balances. The fact that this hearing, as Mr. Hinchey mentioned, is being held in this room under unofficial minority auspices because we can't get the people who run this Congress to begin to place real checks on the executive branch and hold hearings into all these questions is a crisis in American democracy. Five, and finally, a constitutional crisis, the one most intimately associated with this hearing, about the President of the United States, who may very well have deliberately deceived Congress and the American people in order to get us into a war, the authority for which Congress would never have voted had it been aware of the true state of facts. It seems to be generally conceded that the facts or the factual allegations and assertions upon which Congress was induced to vote authorization for the President's use of military force were in fact not true, and the only question is, was the President and his administration a fool or a knave? Did they deliberately falsify information they knew not to be true and hand it off to Congress, or were they simply ignorant and foolish and self-deceiving and believing information which they should have known if our intelligence were functioning properly was not true? I remember during the Vietnam War, there was a Democratic president who got us into that war and a Democratic Congress. And that Democratic Congress, under the leadership of Senator Fulbright, held hearings
which started undoing the case for the war and which applied the checks and balances principle and started holding the feet of the executive to the fire. We don't seem to have a Congress in this case because you have a Republican president, you have a Republican Congress that doesn't seem willing to fulfill the constitutional functions and say what the heck is really going on here. And that's why we're here in this small room. So I have two questions. And this goes to the Downing memorandum. If the president foolishly deceived this country into war, that's bad enough. If he deliberately did it, it's far worse. The Downing Street memo says that it was the conclusion of British intelligence and other officials that the administration was deliberately deceiving the Congress and the American people. Do we know whether that, how, on what that is based, or is that simply a statement of opinion by them? How much can we rely on that?
Well, with respect to your first question, Congressman, it is clear from the Downing Street minutes that this document was intended to be secret, that it was not intended to go beyond those who attended this meeting. This meeting was in July of 2002, July 23rd, 2002, at the Prime Minister's residence, 10 Downing Street, in London. Prime Minister Tony Blair held a meeting at which Richard Dearlove, the senior British intelligence officer, the head of MI6 at the time in Britain, the equivalent of our head of the Central Intelligence Agency, was briefing the Prime Minister and other top security, national security officials in Britain. And he says, and he reports in his briefing, that the president had decided to overthrow Iraqi President Saddam Hussein by launching a war which would be, quote, justified by the conjunction of terrorism and WMD, weapons of mass destruction. And he continues, but the intelligence and facts were being fixed around the policy. Now, some people can say, well, these were just impressions that Mr. Dearlove had. That's not really what happened. Well, that's why we need an investigation. That's why we need these questions asked. Because Mr. Dearlove reports in this briefing, and he had no reason to exaggerate in this secret meeting to the Prime Minister and to other national security officials what the Bush administration had planned. No reason whatsoever. Now, I would just add that when it comes to the question of whether intelligence has been misused, that issue has not been investigated by either the House or the Senate. You know, the American media is...
That was the second set of hearings that Senator Pat Roberts promised after the election, that would occur after the election, and now says, forget about it, we're not going to bother.
That's right. And so when we hear these reports in various news media outlets around the country that this matter has already been investigated, it has not. This question of whether intelligence has been misused, whether there was a deliberate deception campaign, has not been investigated. And what's different about these minutes is that these are official government minutes. This is an official document, and this is not about someone's opinion in a book. This is an official meeting that occurred prior to the start of this war, months before the start of this war, and these questions must be asked and they must be answered.
Add two sentences on that. Richard Dearlove was just back from Washington. The whole purpose of this briefing was to give an account of what he learned from talking to George Tenet and the other senior officials in Washington. So it wasn't sort of like a periodic wrap-up. This was the result of his visit, okay? Number two, Jack Straw, the British Foreign Secretary, said exactly the same thing. In this memo, he says, I talked to Colin Powell. Yes, the president has decided to have this war. We have to figure out how to do it. Number three, Dearlove says this is a major change. This is a major change from before. And number four, Dearlove describes the change as inevitably leading to war. Up until now, we've had scads of circumstantial evidence. I mean, I used to do a little chronology, and I got tired because it got so long. But forget circumstantial. This is documentary evidence here. It has to be taken seriously. And when you put that into this nexus, you can see all this stuff flow right out of it. July 23rd, this meeting. August 26th, Vice President Cheney makes this major speech where he sets the terms of reference. Nuclear weapons they're seeking, and UN inspections aren't worth a damn. Those were his two major points, okay? And then from there on, the National Intelligence Estimate, dated October 1st, October 7th, the president saying our first sign might be a mushroom cloud. October 8th, Condoleezza Rice saying our first sign might be a mushroom cloud. October 9th, Victoria Clark from the Pentagon, our first sign might be a mushroom cloud. October 10th and October 11th, you all voted, well, not all of you, thank God, but some voted, enough voted to give the president their authority, your authority.
60% of Democrats voted no, just important to point out. Mm-hmm. Is it too too much of an exaggeration to say this is a smoking gun?
Not at all. It's not an exaggeration to say this is a smoking gun. This is, I believe, precisely what ought to propel a formal congressional investigation to whether or not the president has committed impeachable offenses. I recognize that the idea that the president of the United States may have engaged in a conspiracy to deceive and mislead the United States Congress and the American people is very hard to believe, because why would any president take the nation into war based on a potential lie? But this is the senior intelligence officer in Britain reporting at a secret meeting to Prime Minister Tony Blair and his top national security officials exactly that, that there was a policy to fix the intelligence. And so we owe it to the Constitution, and this Congress has a duty to investigate whether or not the president engaged in that conspiracy and take the questions wherever they may lead.
Thank you. Thank you all.
That was Attorney John Bonifaz. Look at his website, afterdowningstreet.org. You heard excerpts from a hearing on the Downing Street Minutes called by Representative John Conyers, ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee. Thanks to Pacifica Radio for recording the hearings. You can find links to the text of the Downing Street Minutes on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. You can get information how to order a copy of the complete one-hour program on the Downing Street Minutes by calling us. Get a pen to take down a number. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations. Your tape or CD order is our only support and helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape or CD by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 1-877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.